Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Welcome. Welcome, everyone, to episode 59 of Finding True Wealth. Today we're talking with J.J. Savinsky, CPA with Savinsky & Company. He's also the president of Savinsky & Company, taking over for the legendary Steve Savinsky, his dad, recently. J.J.'s married with two kids, his lovely wife Megan, and a three-year-old, and a six-month-old, so he's got his hands full. And J.J. describes the recent tax code from 2017 as the biggest tax change since Ronald Reagan. We talk at length about the 2017 tax law change, about HSAs, about the standard deduction changes, the opportunity it creates with Roth conversions, and stick around for the end for a bold Michigan football prediction. All right, JJ, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today.
You bet. It's always an exciting topic, right?
Oh, tax is one of the most thrilling and engaging topics that just excellent bonfire banter that everyone loves to talk about.
If this was a visual podcast, like I could see the glowing smile on your face, right? On the subject.
It's one of those that, you know, when we talk about it, we try to keep everyone awake. It can be difficult at times, but, you know, frankly, it's important that people understand these things because this affects your wallet every single day. So to hopefully relate some topics that will help make sense and benefit everybody would be a big help. So we'll try to make this as fun and as engaging as we possibly can.
I mean, the way you talk about it, it seems like you were just born to count beans.
Oh, it's the best. You know, just lock me in an office and count beans all day. But it's not so bad, I promise.
So, JJ, you are the owner... We say owner,
principal, president
mm-hmm. of Savinsky & Company.
Yep.
And if you're familiar with our office, you're in the next building over.
Yep.
So our offices are very similar.
Convenient walk away. Yep.
Yeah. You, it's raining right now. Did you drive or did you walk?
I walked.
All right.
Umbrella and all. We walked right over.
Perfect. So JJ, proud graduate of the University of Michigan. Tell me about the journey in getting to be where you are now as a CPA. Practicing with, you know, what we say, retail mm-hmm. clients.
Sure. So started my career with KPMG, which is one of the big four accounting firms, working on very, very large clients. Found a opportunity to go into the public or in the private sector a couple years later in financial reporting. So I went from doing audit into SEC reporting for a publicly traded retail company. So going from the demanding public accounting sector into the private sector was a nice change, but the one thing that was missing in all of this is the opportunity to work with individuals and small businesses. My father, Steve, has a small accounting firm for...
The legend, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely. started a firm in 1993 and has been doing small businesses and personals for years, and he needed some help during tax time. So I'd come in and moonlight and meet some clients, and when you start working with small business owners and individuals, and you can see the value add that he has and the impact that he has on these businesses to make them better, and the friendships that are formed and the relationships, it was awesome to see, and it was gravitating me towards that, as I could see, I have an innate nature to help people, and this provided a way to not obviously make a nice living, but more importantly, add value to these people's businesses, help them operate more efficiently, make better financial decisions, and pay less tax every year as best we can, and protect our people, educate our people, and make everything run a little smoother.
Well, it sounds like that's a big passion for you.
It is, absolutely.
It gives you a lot of meaningful purpose, mm-hmm. as I like to say. Cool. So the last time I talked taxes on the podcast, it was before the, what do we call the job? Is it like a
Tax
Jobs
Cut
Act?
And Jobs Act.
Yeah, before the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. So a lot of things have changed. We have, you know, the biggest change since what? Since the Reagan days.
Since Reagan days. 86 was the last change of this magnitude, and that was a complete overhaul of the tax code. This was the closest thing since. So it was one of those tax laws that every single taxpayer in this country and even abroad was affected by this. So it's something.
So most people were affected by paying less tax, but I don't really hear, I read headlines that might speak otherwise.
This is a huge misunderstanding with this, with the tax law that changed. And a good example that we actually incurred was, it was going to be a rough tax season last year when one of our first clients walks in the door. And to kind of put this in a, hopefully a way we can understand. So this gentleman, he's a single gentleman and makes $150,000, does very well. On his 2017 tax return, so this is pre-Tax Cut and Jobs Act, he had a total tax bill of $27,000, but he withheld $30,000 via withholding, so he received a $3,000 refund. Walks into our office in 18, all excited to get his refund, and he makes just about the same amount of money, $150,000. Good news is his total tax went down to $25,000.
So that's $2,000 less tax.
$2,000 less tax. Well, there was a little bit of a problem. He only withheld $21,000. And he was confused because he said, I didn't change anything. I never updated my W-4. How in the world did my withholding go from $30,000 to $21,000? And I said, frankly, it was screwed up. They screwed up the withholding and the IRS was begging people to check it because they knew that people were withholding less. And
so this, it was just something that changed by default.
Unfortunately.
But he should have noticed his $800 a month increase, right?
Yeah, and of course we said, did you notice that your paycheck went up by, what, call it $400 every pay period? He said, yeah. He's like, it was nice, but you know, you notice it once and then you kind of forget about it and then you don't multiply it by 26 pay periods and all of a sudden go, holy cow, I might have a problem. And I know we had this conversation with practically every other client at least where they were shocked by the amount of tax they thought they were paying. But fact of the matter is almost everybody paid less tax and withheld less as a result. It's just unfortunately the ratio was a lot less was withheld versus the savings, which kind of meant that people's refunds went down or they owed all of a sudden. That does not mean you paid more tax. It just means you owed more at tax time. So it's important to note that if you looked at your 2017 tax return, you say, what was my total tax? And then you looked at your 2018 total tax. I bet you if you made about the same amount of money, you would see that you did pay less tax.
So the key is not whether you have a refund or if you owe. It's looking on that line on like the second page. It says total tax.
Absolutely. Yeah. Total taxes.
You probably have that line number memorized, right?
I used to. And now it's it keeps moving. The new forms, if it's they look a little bit differently. So
yeah, it keeps moving. It's like, what's the 401k max this year? I can't remember. They change it every year, it seems like. It's 19,000, by the way.
Yep.
It is a moving target. So what else was big on your radar with the new tax code?
So one of the other big things is for business owners.
Mm-hmm.
So to quickly highlight it, not to go too deep into it, we're all well aware that they dropped the corporate rate, right? That was part of the big argument. People were saying, it looks like they're trying to make a big tax cut for the rich and cut the corporate rate from 35 to 21%. Of course, that benefits business owners. It's one of those things, though, that was a necessary evil because around the world, corporate rates are lower. And we do need to compete here. So this was a move, a very expensive one, but one of those moves that was necessary to compete in the global economy. So they did drop the corporate rate.
If they didn't drop it, Burger King would have been gone to Ireland.
Absolutely.
Or maybe they already are.
Yep. So it's one of those things that we need to keep our businesses here. So I do believe that this was designed to compete. But what this drew ire of is a lot of small business owners. So if you're a let's say a sole proprietor or an LLC or a partnership or an S corporation, you say, well, how is it fair?
Basically all your clients.
Yeah, pretty much. You know, we have a few corporates, but S corps and partnerships are the meat and potatoes of small businesses, LLCs. And you say, well, how is it fair that the corporates get to pay so much less tax and we don't? Well, not to worry, they came up with this deduction called the Qualified Business Income Deduction, which, long story short, 20% of your income is now a deduction. So if you bring in net income, bottom line, of $100,000, you get on your tax return a $20,000 deduction. This is a massive, massive tax cut for small business owners. You know, they're subject to certain limitations, but generally, you get a 20% deduction. I mean, that was an absolute huge pickup.
It's funny, JJ, I don't remember seeing that on my tax return.
Well, unfortunately, if you're a doctor or a lawyer or a CPA or a financial advisor, there's certain phase outs that we don't get if you're a specified service business. So it's not quite for everybody. But
so the IRS is specifically like exempted certain services by name.
So I think we need to get better lobbyists because whoever we had in power didn't do a very good job for us. But at the end of the day, even you and I still paid less tax. So it's important to know, we don't get this big old deduction maybe, but we do pay less tax. So
one thing that I've been reading a lot about are people moving out of places like New York and New Jersey because of their property tax bills. How is that affected on the new tax law?
So one of the hot button topics that came up is the state and local tax limitation. And to give kind of an example, if you live in San Francisco, in one of the most expensive cities in the world, you make $1 million. It's pretty good. San Francisco, you might be able to afford a one-bedroom apartment out there on $1 million.
Sounds like you're working in one of these hot Silicon Valley firms, right?
Yep, and out there, your example could be you're paying 10% in state taxes. So on $1 million, you're paying $100,000 in state taxes. And then you couple in, you own a $1 million house, which has, call it a $20,000 tax bill. Now you're talking $120,000 of state and local tax. One thing that the government did, and may or may not be politically motivated, is that they capped the state and local tax deduction at $10,000. So someone in California who's paying top 39.6% tax rate, now 37, used to get a big old deduction of $120,000 times 37%, now capped at $10,000. So this is a direct hit on their tax bill. So all of a sudden now people are saying, oh, it's a lot more expensive to live in states like New York, New Jersey, California. There's a little bit of a migration, certainly at least until new tax laws legislated. So keep abreast of who's in office.
So that guy who has the $1 million house and $1 million salary in Cali probably got a tax increase.
They may have.
As a result of the tax law.
That's one of those examples of pretty much everybody got a tax cut. But when you say, hey, how about those people out in California? It's a little bit different story.
So the rate went down, but the deductions went significantly down.
Significantly down. So depending on their deductions, it may have hurt them or kept them even though it was touted it was a tax cut for everybody, and it generally was, but certain people like that, they may have gotten hit. So and that's one of those things that on the other side of the coin, if here, let's say you live in Florida, how is it fair that these people in California get this monster deduction because they chose to live in a high tax state? That's not the people's problem in Florida. So for them to pay for people in California have this high tax rate and give them a big old deduction wasn't fair to everybody. So it's not just it's bad for them. It was also good for maybe people in lower tax states.
I always wondered, Florida, the property taxes are reasonable. I think they're actually less than Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And they have zero income tax.
Yeah.
And the sales tax might be a little higher. It might be like 7 or something. But I look at the situation and I'm like, Michigan's taxes are way worse.
Yep.
We have a 4.25% state tax, right?
Absolutely.
And, how does Florida compete? I'd like to do an audit on the state of Florida and then copy that model in Michigan, right?
It seems to be working.
Yeah. don't know, maybe they just have so many more people.
Lots of county taxes too. So you may pay 6-7% in your taxes in one regard, but then all of a sudden you're collecting on the county too. So it can.
Okay.
There's certain times where maybe it's a little more locally driven versus state driven, but it's one of those things that seems to be working somehow. But if you decide if it's a smart tax way to try to call yourself a resident of Florida, it's not as easy as it seems. Some people get caught trying to say they're a resident of Florida when they're only down there a couple months of the year.
What is the rule that you have to be like 7 months out of the year?
Exactly. You got to prove that, you know, I can't do the mental math on my head right now. It's summertime. That brain is off, but you know, 365 divided by two, that number better be higher in Florida than it is in any other state if you want to call yourself a resident of Florida.
Okay.
But everyone knows that a snowbird is, we don't go down there all that long, so.
So one of the other big changes that we were talking about before we started recording was the standard deduction.
Yes.
That was a biggie, right?
Standard deduction, I would say on average, that this is the thing that most people saw and that were impacted by directly. And unfortunately, I don't think we did a good enough job of educating everyone in time, so maybe they just realized this when they did their taxes. But the standard deduction, which is that that deduction that gives you your property tax deduction and your mortgage deduction and charitable contributions, that used to be for married filing jointly $12,600, $12,700, 2018, all of a sudden that number was $24,000, which is awesome if you don't itemize, because now you're getting a big old deduction for doing nothing. But the way it was designed was certainly, I don't want to call it suspect, but it impacted a lot of people in many different ways, perhaps unfavorably. So I guess to give you an idea of what makes up the standard deduction, yeah, quickly kind of build the model for you. For most people, what makes it up are your state and local taxes, which remember, are now capped at $10,000, plus your mortgage interest, plus your charitable contributions. You take the higher of the standard or those deductions altogether. So what we found is we had a whole bunch of clients that brought in their 10 Vietnam vet slips and their a couple thousand dollars of donations to their church. And it may not sound all that significant, but that's a lot of money for a lot of taxpayers. So they brought all those in. And then we say, okay, state and local taxes, even if you have a big old job and a big old tax, that's capped at 10 grand. Well, let's say they're a little older and their home is paid off, so they don't have any mortgage. That means in order to get to that standard deduction number, they would need to donate $14,000 to get their first dollar of deduction. That is surprising in the least for a lot of people, because most people can't afford to donate $14,000.
So the point is, if they want to get to a point where they're itemizing over the standard deduction, they'd have to donate to charity, which is great. But back in the day, we pretty much every dollar was able to be deducted.
Absolutely.
And now, not the case.
And this is a result of that state and local cap for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And obviously the doubled standard deduction. So what we had to explain to people was, first of all, hey, maybe your donations are going to have to come from the heart, because sadly, to get to that $24,000 isn't realistic for a lot of people. But there are certain ways to still make it work. It just requires a little bit more planning. So we did have some clients that we were able to do some planning for and actually save them quite a bit of money and take advantage of certain ways that we can talk about shortly to actually make those donations count.
Sure. So what are some of the options? Let's say maybe we should go through an example of someone who's not hitting the deductions,
mm-hmm,
and then someone maybe who has tons of deductions that would be over the limit either way.
Okay.
Would that work?
Yeah.
All right, so let's start with a simple case, right?
Okay.
So we've got someone who has, you know, let's say a $3,000 property tax bill,
mm-hmm,
and they have, let's say, you know, another $3,000 in state income tax, and then maybe $8,000 of mortgage interest. Okay, so that's 3 plus 3 plus 8.
That's 14.
That's 14,000.
Still can do that math.
You can do that, okay. And that, like, the old way, you'd write all that off.
Absolutely.
And the new way, well,
we're 10,000 short.
Yeah.
So you look at the 14 and you look at the 24, which everyone gets. You say, well, I'll just take the 24.
Absolutely.
So if I give $10,000 to the church, doesn't do me any good.
You're no better off.
Huh.
And that's unfortunately a sad reality for these churches. I think that some of these people are going to realize this, and we may see a reduction in donations. That's my fear. It's not been proven or anything, but it's one of those things that it's a sad reality that unfortunately the charities might have not have benefited so much from this.
All right, so let's take the same example and double it. So I have $6,000 in income in property taxes, okay. $6,000 in income taxes, $16,000 in mortgage interest. The 6 plus 6 is capped at only 10.
At 10,000.
Right? So I can't take that 12. But then my mortgage is 16,000. So I am at 26.
Yep.
So at this point, I'm not going to take the standard deduction. I will itemize. And if I donate a dollar to the church, then I can write that off.
You get the full deduction.
Okay.
Yep. So, but your example gave a $16,000 mortgage. If you find someone maybe with a $10,000 interest for the year, now they're at $25,000. Or I'm sorry, what's my math here? $20,000.
Yeah.
If you donate $10,000, I think we're finding a little bit of a sweet spot here. So to recap the math, state and local tax capped at $10,000. So this is your property taxes, your Michigan taxes that you may pay. So that's capped at $10,000, and your mortgage interest is another $10,000, so that's $20,000. Remember, standard deduction is $24,000. So if you donate $10,000, your first $4,000 really didn't help you much, but okay, the next six did.
So with my $16,000, that's capped at $10,000 as well, so that was my error.
Your mortgage? Or the
We said $10,000 for state and local taxes. And then I said $16,000 for the mortgage interest.
Yes, that's not capped.
Okay,
so you can still take as big of a mortgage as you want.
But then your example was if it were 10.
Yeah, okay. The 16 says, okay, you're automatically going to itemize. But the point I'm trying to make is that there's an opportunity here to plan a little bit that we never used to have to do because you pretty much automatically itemized.
Do you think TurboTax would help me with that?
Probably not. You know, it's one of those things that you just click the button and submit and hope it's right. It's not going to tell you. It's not going to tell you how to. Hey, maybe this is maybe a better way to do it. So, working with advisors such as Nick and a CPA, if they work together, this could provide a really big synergistic relationship for a lot of our clients, because we're finding that if the financial advisor has some, hey, we have some appreciated stock, or we have RMDs, we can talk about a few ways that we can get that deduction back and make it really work for maybe ways that you didn't even know existed.
Yeah, if I was lucky enough to buy Apple at $10, now it's at $200. I can offload some of that without having to pay the tax.
Yeah, we had a client that he found this. I don't know how he found it, but he found this little pharmaceutical company, and he bought a whole bunch of stock when his kids were in diapers. And he came in this tax season and he goes, well, I paid for two years of college, but I sold all that stock. And he paid an egregious amount of capital gains. And even though it's only at 15%, when you sell $100,000 of stock, he's paying $15,000 of taxes. And had he talked to us, we might have been able to find ways to say, hey, maybe we can unload some of that stock. You know, maybe you could donate some of that stock and maybe not pay the capital gains and then pay it out of pocket in some way to all of a sudden maximize your benefit. And the point was, if you donate appreciated stock, guess what? You don't pay that capital gains tax. So that's 15 cents on the dollar you'll save before even getting any charitable donation that you wouldn't have paid otherwise.
And speaking about the mechanism of how this is done, if we use Ameritrade as our custodian, okay, and all the different organizations, the different churches, the Salvation Army, you know, pick your charity, almost all the time they have a brokerage account set up at Ameritrade or the other broker dealers, the other custodians, and they just sign a simple form that says, please transfer, 100 shares of XYZ, and we call the church, get their brokerage account number, and it transfers.
So it doesn't sound that difficult, does it?
Super simple. And then the church gives you a letter showing that they've received the money.
And why don't you think more people do this?
They don't know.
Yep.
This is a public service announcement, JJ. That's what we're doing here.
Yeah, it's a very simple thing, incredibly effective, savvy, yet it's not taken advantage of. So I'm hoping we can get the word out a little bit on this.
So that's one strategy with charity. What about setting up your own family foundation kind of deal?
Yeah, so some people that are fortunate enough to be able to set up a, you know, a foundation or those high wealth individuals have that opportunity to do so. But even for those that maybe don't have millions and millions and millions of dollars, but say, you know, do have some money, there's a new sort of newer sort of vehicle, I guess, if you will, called it's a donor advised fund. That's what this. It is a donor advised fund. Basically, as if to give you an example of how this would work. So, I tell Nick, Nick, I need to set up a fund to donate money, and I want to maximize my tax benefit. So Nick's going to say, all right, maybe we set up this donor advised fund.
And the Which way, is just a brokerage account.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just another brokerage account that can, you know, you can invest the money. So if you say, oh, I inherited $50,000, I want to donate it all to charity, but I don't want to donate it all in 1 year because that's no good for the church. It's nice, but then they don't have, if you wanted to donate it year over year over year, but get the tax deduction in maybe 1 year, this is what the donor advised fund has the ability to do.
And maybe you're one of these guys where if you donate $10,000 every year for 5 years, it doesn't give you a tax benefit.
There you go. So
you do it all in 1 year, so you get to itemize.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so you put the 50 in year one, you get to itemize, so you get the tax deduction.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can keep it invested or however you want, and then pay out the $10,000 a year for the 5 years, plus the earnings.
Yes. And this, the cool things about this account is that you control when it goes out, but you also get to get the tax deduction right away. So yeah, you give church money over 10 years, but get the tax deduction all up front. Time value of money proves there that is a worthwhile investment. And another good thing about it is, you know, you have a good advisor like Nick, all of a sudden that money can grow. And all of a sudden you can give more money to the charity than you even thought you could, because now it's invested, invested wisely and growing. So it's a huge opportunity for some people that do have a nice pot of money that they want to donate, but not blow up the church's budget because, hey, I need to donate all this money in 1 year for tax reasons. It's tough for anyone to manage that money well.
Well, it's a good point you bring up, but I don't think Father Brandon would be upset if we write him a check for $50,000
until the next year at Christmas time. He goes, hey Nick, where's that 50 grand? You have another 50 grand laying around?
Right.
Hopefully you don't have to have that conversation.
Naturally. The other thing that I wanted to bring up, and this is a big passion of mine, is the opportunity for Roth conversions.
Oh.
Some people fall into the sweet spot, right, where they can convert 10 or 20,000 and have almost no tax due.
Yes.
How could that be?
Well, the interesting thing about Roth conversions is that, well, first of all, a lot of people don't know they exist, but the ability to do this because of the new tax law gives us a pretty big window, actually, of people that pay very little to no tax in certain income levels. So, for example, if we have someone that all they're doing is, you know, they're retired, they have a small pension, very, very little, but most of their income is Social Security, but they do have a 401k or a traditional IRA out there that's pre-tax money, all of a sudden we can say, hey, let's convert this and convert it to a Roth. But anything you convert is taxable. But remember what we said here, this person, all they had is very, very little pension and Social Security.
So how are they living, though, JJ? Social Security is not going to be able to fund your entire expenses if you're in your 60s, would it?
No, it wouldn't. But it's one of those things that if you're savvy with your money and maybe your house is paid off,
yeah,
and you're able to
tap into the non-retirement account.
Exactly. Right? You have, you know, non-retirement accounts that you can use that could help supplement your income. So things that, you know, have already been taxed, you can use those monies that could help supplement your retirement. And those, again, if you're not necessarily selling stock or anything like that, there's not a tax impact if you're just taking money out of the bank. But the idea here is that this Roth conversion, what we can do is say, all right, when you take this money out at a traditional IRA, when you're 70 and a half and those scary required minimum distributions pop up, you may be paying tax. Maybe not a ton, but you're still paying something. I'd like to pay nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So if we take this person that is making, call it 30 grand in Social Security, and that's really the most of all of her taxable income, not all that's taxed. So if we tack on 12 grand of a Roth conversion, when you do the tax return, all of a sudden you say, wait a second, standard deduction is 12 grand. And the Social Security isn't only, it's taxed very little. Tax might be zero still, even though now all of a sudden that 12 grand that you would have paid tax on when you're 70 and a half, you think the government basically says, well, you did pay the tax, you just didn't have any tax liability. So all of a sudden now that money that was pre-tax is now tax-free and can grow tax-free, comes out tax-free. You never paid tax
on it. I love it. It's my favorite thing. And it also has the effect of reducing your IRA balance. So when you get to the required minimum, there's less that's forced out.
Great point. So now all of a sudden those RMDs go down and less taxes to be paid there. Yeah. And you have better control over it. And then, hey, let's say you give it to, you end up never using it, and you hand it off to your sons or your daughters or grandchildren. They never have to pay tax on it. So yeah. It's an excellent way, if you can get money into a Roth, to create wealth, perhaps generational wealth, but even just for your family or for college, whatever it may be. And growing tax-free is always the best way to go, if in my opinion.
The only thing less utilized than a Roth is HSA. I want to come back to that, though. Okay. I want to come back to that. So let's say you make more than 193, which is the joint income limit for Roth.
Yep.
But you don't have an IRA yet.
Yeah.
Can we do a backdoor?
Oh, yeah. So this is this is one thing that I've never quite understood how this works, how the government still allows this, but... You know, the idea behind a Roth IRA, it's not designed for higher income earners, right? This is a everyday American retirement savings thing. Let's put this money in, after tax money. You know, remember a Roth is after tax money. So if you put in 5 grand, you don't get a deduction for 5 grand. It's just one of those things that you put in the 5 grand, but the beauty of that is it grows tax free, comes out tax free, double tax free. It's pretty sweet. It is highly limited. $6,000 in 2019, $7,000, I believe, if you're over 50 for the catch-up. Mm-hmm. But growing tax-free is sweet, but it is limited at, when I think, 193, 194,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah, it has to be under 193.
Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you say, well, I can't contribute to a Roth IRA and making over 193, but like Nick said, you don't have an IRA. So there's a way that the government allows, called the back door. So what we'll do is have you set up a non-deductible traditional IRA with Nick. So you put in, call it 10 grand into this non-deductible IRA and immediately convert it to a Roth IRA. Sneaks right in the, that's there's your term, sneaks backdoor. Right in the back door, and all of a sudden, now you contributed to Roth IRA even though you're not supposed to be able to do it. It's an absolute loophole, but it does exist, and it's a heck of a way to contribute.
One asterisk, okay. If you were doing 10, you'd have to do it in April, right? Or last year, this year. There's a $6,000 limit.
Good point.
You put in 6, convert the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Or if it's April 1st, do 6 for last year and 6 for this year. Do 12,
yep.
Convert the next day. Really clean.
Yep.
It's fabulous.
So it's not to say that you can't do the Roth. So it's one of those things that, you know, personally, I always push Roth. But it's not to say you are limited. Even if you're in the higher income, you still can do it. You've got to have the right vehicles
and
to do it.
And one more point. I did a whole podcast on this topic. 401ks are not fair.
Oh, okay? They are not.
So 401s, simple, SEPs, single Ks, IRAs, Roth IRAs. So let's say you make $250,000 and your company offers a Roth 401k.
Mm-hmm.
You can do $19,000 Roth 401k.
Yeah.
And the dude on the street making 200, who doesn't have a Roth 401k, can't do anything.
Yeah.
Backdoor at the best, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just unbelievable. I think every company should offer Roth. It doesn't cost the company anything extra to have the Roth as an option. The administrators are doing the work, the same amount of work anyway.
Yeah.
They don't raise their fees if you're going pre-tax and Roth.
And Nick, it's what I found being in... you know, in KPMG and at Taubman was the lack of education that they gave you. So you walk in your new office the first day and you get an email from the HR director saying, okay, here are your options. Did anyone sit down and say, you want to talk to talk to an advisor that we have here on staff, or you know, or some outside counsel to say, what's your situation? What's best for you?
Yeah.
No, of course not. You just got to click a button and hope that's the right thing to do. Click retirement 2050 and watch it grow. And there's no little to no guidance. So it's hugely critical that when you select these retirement options, when you start a new job or switch in your current role, that you understand that what's the best option. And then if the Roth is option, they don't advertise that. It's up to us to say, look, a Roth 401k is available. Why isn't it not being utilized? It's one of those things that drives me crazy when you see these 401ks and how little they give guidance for their employees.
I think the legislation that came in with default fund of choice, it used to be the money market, now it's the target date fund.
Yeah.
I think that's positive. You know, some companies now, they have like a mandatory opt-in. Like you have to opt out or else you're automatically enrolled.
Yep.
And I think that's great. I think people oftentimes get confused, which I think is a little silly. They say, well, I'm maxing out. Well, they're really just getting the full match.
Getting the match.
Which, like, I'm putting in three, you're putting in three.
Absolutely.
But really, the max is $19,000.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work for, like, the University of Michigan, you can do, and let's say you're a physician working at the hospital and you're over 50. And you can do $25,000 into the 401, 403,
mm-hmm.
and another $25,000 into the 457, okay? And the university's putting in a huge match, okay?
Yeah.
So you're getting monstrous retirement contributions, but a lot of people don't know that you can stack the plans like that. And secondly, the university, you can do the 457 as Roth.
Yeah.
So
oh, man.
You're a physician making a killing, right? Getting huge Roth contributions, still stacked. So it just goes to show that they're not all
created. Yeah, why is it fair that if you're just if you just have a small business and you just do a simple IRA with 12.5 is all you can do, yet this yeah. physician at U of M is socking away 50 plus grand, half of it being tax free.
But you know what, though? The physician that is in private practice oftentimes can make more than working at the university. So the private practice guy has a higher comp sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then it's up to them to put their own plan together.
Yep.
You know, so you just have to be smart. And a lot of times the doctors at the university don't even take advantage of it anyway.
No, I'm just doing I'm maxing it out, right? Getting the
yeah,
match of a,
right.
Might be a nice match, but it's certainly not as nice as they can do.
If you put in five, the university puts in 10, right? Some people just have that mindset.
And let me tell you, Nick, I can't think of a higher rate of return if you have a doctor that's making buku bucks and he's in that 37% bracket. So every dollar you put away, you're saving 37, you're making 37%.
Yeah.
And that's federal. Don't forget state. There's another 4.5. So you're talking 40%+ on every dollar you put away, yet people don't do it.
And you know the other thing they don't do is HSA.
Oh
so,
yeah, this is so my favorite. HSA is my favorite.
You said Roth is like double tax free, the uh-huh. best, right? The HSA is the only triple tax free vehicle.
Yep.
And people are not, number one, they're not choosing high deductible plans,
mm-hmm.
which if you're paying for your own coverage,
yep.
you got to choose the high deductible plan. You know, full disclosure,
it's the only thing we can afford.
This is not a recommendation. Okay,
yeah, absolutely.
Like you make your own choice. We can help counsel you. But in my opinion, oftentimes the high deductible plan is the best. That's what I've chosen for myself. Not a recommendation, but it allows you to do an HSA. Mm-hmm. So the HSA is the triple tax free. And what I do find is that the people that do participate in the HSA, they put the money in. And then they use that money to pay for their expenses.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't take advantage of the full triple tax-free part.
Agreed. Yeah.
You have to let the money bake in the oven, which allows it to grow,
yep.
which gives you your tax deferral. Otherwise, you just put it in, taking it out.
Oh, a little story for you, Nick, with HSA. So I worked at the Taubman Company, and they had absolutely fantastic benefits. They still do. They offered an HSA back in 2012. When I started there, and they did have a good onboarding program. This is, you know, the example of, you know, companies educating Taubman was not one of them. They were very, very good at sitting us down and explaining to what's going on. But they said, hey, everyone, we highly, highly recommend you paying attention to this HSA. So what they said was, look, we understand that it can be expensive to pay for things out of pocket. It sounds scary. You know, writing a check for a medical bill is frightening. But what people need to understand is that these premiums that you're paying your biweekly premium were so much lower that when you add up everything and you say, how much am I paying in premiums? So you may be paying, I don't know, $200 every pay period. HSA, maybe you're paying $50. So you think every pay period, you're gonna have $150 more going into that HSA. Don't forget growing tax-free. And then often they find, you know, companies will give you money into your HSA to help compensate.
Yeah, like a match.
Yeah, let's say something happens in January, you may not have the money in the HSA yet. Companies often will put money in and to help fund that HSA. Yeah, that will give you a match. And
I think I need to go for a company that's going to give me a $50 premium and an HSA match.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable concept, but the whole design behind it is the fact that for better or worse, when people have a low deductible plan, they often go to the doctor for everything, and the cost of medical is obviously through the roof, right? The HSA, when you have it and all of a sudden it's your money, you sit down, you go, do I really need to go to the doctor today? Like, am I feeling that bad? So full disclosure, you might, there's a downside to it, because yeah, you're more careful of what you're spending money on. But when you go, doctor sends your prescription to your neighborhood pharmacy, did you even shop it around? Do you even know how much it is at Costco or Walmart? Or
yeah, it eliminates the third party payer.
Absolutely.
So you're paying the full price. Mm-hmm. And so you have to make sure that it's competitive.
So now all of a sudden we're shopping around. So, but going off the tangent, the point of it is that even though the HSA, you know, can be scary, what people are failing to realize is that because you're paying less premiums and your money is being utilized, it's often cheaper to have an HSA. And then we haven't even touched on the tax benefits. So that's what Nick was hinting at, the triple tax free. And here's the explanation there. When you contribute to an HSA, it's like a 401k. So if you put in $1,000 and you make 50 grand, your taxable income is now 49. So you're getting a tax deduction. It is limited. $6,750, I think, is the limit for a family. But the point is, you're getting a deduction for everything you put in, right? So that's pretty cool. Then it grows tax deferred. So if you don't use it, it just grows and grows and grows. You don't pay tax on it every year. And then the finishing of it all is that when you take it out, you're not taxed at all. Completely tax avoided.
If used for medical. But the medical expenses are out of control, and yep, so they're going to be used.
They're going to be used. If you try, you will be able to use that HSA. And frankly, IRS does a pretty good job of saying what you can use it for, and it's surprisingly...
It's pretty liberal.
Right? Yeah, you can use it for a lot of, like, LASIK surgery. That is an I believe that is an option. So it's like things like that you'd be surprised of.
How about my Botox? Can I do that?
Botox might be tough. You know, those kind of things. I mean, it's working. It is working.
I'm just joking. I've never had Botox.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things that you're able to use it. But Nick brings up a good point. If this thing can grow tax free, come out tax free, why not let it grow? Why not use this down the road? Maybe pay for your Medicare premiums when you're older, or, you know, and, you know, say
your Medicare supplement, mm-hmm, policy.
Yeah, or you end up in a home. All of a sudden, this thing can be utilized tax free, but it's been growing for 40 years tax free. So
it can also be thought of in this regard as a, you know, long term care self insurance plan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So if you tell somebody, hey, look, not only are you going to pay less for health insurance, because the HSA is often cheaper for healthy families. Yeah. For a healthy family, you say, okay, so not only are you going to pay probably less for health insurance, anything you put in is going to be a tax deduction, and then it's going to grow tax-free, and then it's going to come out tax-free. It's a pretty sweet deal. So if you are looking at your enrollment documents and you see an HSA option, don't ignore it. Don't be scared of it. Get educated. Come talk to people that understand these things and say, hey, is this the right plan for me? Can I make this work? Don't be scared by those high deductibles, because you'd be surprised how much insurance can cover and all of a sudden how much this could really benefit you. I mean, personal example, I contributed at my last company the difference between what I would have paid in the Advantage plan versus how much I had to pay the premiums in the HSA. So basically, I think it was another $150 a pay period I put away in my HSA. 5 years later, I left with over 10 grand in that account. And all that was the premiums.
It wasn't invested? Or it wasn't money market?
It was invested, okay. But the amount of contributions that I would have paid in premiums. Yeah. I'm a healthy guy. So everything was covered, preventative care, right? So your physical. So I never used the HSA. It just grew and grew and grew. I would have put away $200, or I would have just paid those in premiums. And all of a sudden now they're going to work for me. So now they're sitting away for retirement.
It's a definite arbitrage opportunity for
absolutely.
Healthy families.
So you know, look at those things wisely. Don't just click what you did last year. Sit down and look at these things.
All right, we got 44 minutes of excellent tax talk here.
Oh, man. Exciting. So hopefully it's exciting and engaging.
I mentioned that you're a proud University of Michigan graduate.
Yeah.
And I want to get and this is kind of, I didn't prep you for this.
All right,
so
this is good.
You're going to have to think fast here, okay? So I'm going to ask you about a football prediction for this fall.
Okay.
All right. So to kind of tee it up, this is Harbaugh's fourth year, I think. Mm-hmm. And they have, I believe, 10, maybe 9 returning offensive starters, including the quarterback.
All right.
Okay, Shea Patterson. Although, I think we lost a lineman and we lost the running back. But Chris Evans is also suspended.
He's out for the year.
So he's out.
Or suspended? Okay.
He's out, yeah. So, I don't know. That leaves True Wilson or something, I guess. Maybe we'll have a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't kept up on the recruiting as much as I should have. But the offense looks pretty good,
okay.
Especially with Shea Patterson, right?
Hopefully.
And then a new game plan too, new coordinator. Defense, we lose a lot.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of NFL talent that just went disappeared.
Yeah, there is like Chase Winovich, Rashawn Gary,
Devin Bush.
Devin Bush, my favorite.
He was underrated.
He was 10th, right?
In the draft. 10th overall. Yeah, a guy can flat out fly.
But we have Don Brown. Okay, so Don Brown has shown. When the cupboard, you know, leaves for the NFL, he replaces very well, okay? So even though these guys are gone, I have a lot of confidence in the system,
okay.
Right? Like Ohio State. They lose everyone. They're still number one, right?
Quick reload, right?
Yeah, reload. So I'm optimistic about the team in general. Also, right, Urban Meyer is gone.
Thank God.
Okay? So the East, you know, I'm not too worried about Michigan State or Penn State. Always worried about Ohio State.
Nick, I'm very worried about Michigan State. That's
really?
An area, that program, don't sleep on them. They're a feisty bunch, and all they love to do is beat Michigan. So
especially in the Big House, right?
Oh, man, that's their favorite. Yeah, so.
Okay.
Don't sleep on them, though.
I won't, but I'm, you know, it's always Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
And so Urban Meyer was legendary against Michigan, but he's gone. So a little bit of uncertainty there,
mm-hmm.
But, you know, they have and a new quarterback as well. So if this is... This is our year. Let's take advantage of Ohio State maybe being down. I don't want to really say that.
Yeah.
But I'm starting to feel like we can at least make it to Indianapolis for the Big Ten championship game.
That'd be great.
And I've been seeing online on the Twitter feeds, like Kirk Herbstreit and other guys, they have Michigan like number 2 behind Alabama.
Oh my gosh.
Which is kind of scares me. I mean, we're always the July national champions.
Yep, yep. September Heismans.
But I feel like if we played Alabama, we might lose 35-0 at halftime, you know? Okay, so do you have... I'm going to make the bold prediction of we're going to win the Big Ten for the first time since 2004.
Oh, my gosh. That would be a welcome surprise. I don't necessarily agree with you because... I don't know if you watched that Ohio State game last year, but Don Brown couldn't figure out how to cover a crossing route, so that became problematic for me. I think the offense will be better. It's going to be interesting to see how this, what I would say, a very, very favorable home schedule work out for them. I just have a feeling they're going to find one game to lose that they shouldn't, whether it be an Iowa or an Ohio State.
Yeah,
or,
Iowa is at home though, so that's
Iowa's at home. I just you never know, and it's like find a game to lose that they shouldn't lose. I think they finished second in the in the division again
behind
Ohio State,
okay.
Because Ohio State just doesn't lose. I don't know, it just drives me crazy. But and then I think we're gonna have to have some conversations about our head coach if this happens. I think it's with the amount of money that you're paying him and his expectations and his lack of delivery thus far. This is his chance. This is it. If he has the schedule lining up, this is the one. So You heard it from me first here. Don't go to the sports book, but you know, if you have a friendly wager with your buddies and you want to earn a few beers, I'd say take Michigan to finish second in the division. Unfortunately, staying away from Indy again.
Okay, I want to press you with one more question.
All right.
Okay. On the Harbaugh topic.
Okay.
Who would be the best alternative? Because I kind of come up empty there.
Sadly, I don't know.
Right. So if you're evaluating the high expectations and you keep coming in second,
mm-hmm.
but there's no one that you think can take you over the hill, right? Maybe Urban Meyer could come work for us. You know?
I'm sure he'd love it. Yeah. Or you got to find one of those hot young coaches and take a chance. A guy like the PJ Flex of the world, or the Scott Frost. You know, the ones that you're uncertain about, but those are the ones that you're not going to find a Nick Saban or a Dabo Sweeney laying around. So
no.
You may have to take a chance on a younger, promising guy. But Harbaugh's our guy. You know, we're committed here, but he's got to deliver. It's time.
All right, well, come December 1st, we'll come back and listen to this and see how we did.
All right, sounds good.
Hey, JJ, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Nick. Appreciate it.
Hey, it's great info from JJ Savinsky. Really appreciate him coming on the show and sharing with us. So obviously, if we can take anything away, we can take away that, taxes are not simple. And CPA, working with your trusted CPA adds tremendous value over using a TurboTax solution or a seasonable tax office. I don't want to put any names out there, but recently we had to have a client call and figure out some things with what happened with their 2018 tax return. And unfortunately, the service that they used, probably the biggest one out there, they're simply closed this time of year. In this is recorded in July. I mean, what do you do? I don't even know. It's frustrating. So we love our independent CPAs. They're here all year long for the small business, medium-sized business, entrepreneur, and just a W-2 regular 1040. They're here for you for that too. So if you have a portfolio over $500,000 and you're looking for investment help, or if you have retirement questions, are you on track to reach your retirement goal of whatever age that might be or whatever income level that might be, we'd love to sit down with you as your CFP and we'll run through the scenario and give you some thoughts on how your money is invested and how your plan shakes out. So you can apply for an appointment online at peakwm.com, where we can help you retire with confidence.